honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 97-year-old Durrell Gibbs of Fort Benton, Montana. After World War II, he fulfilled his dream of becoming a cattle rancher as he and his wife Lucille raised their three kids in central Montana. We heard how he was rounding up cattle on horseback as a five-year-old, and he continued riding horses till he was 90. But so many of those memories never would have materialized if he didn't survive some intense moments of hand-to-hand combat on Okinawa. When an enemy soldier dropped into his foxhole in the middle of the night. I don't want you to share anything you're not comfortable sharing with regard to how you made it out of that hand-to-hand situation, and the Japanese soldier did not. But can you pick up things where we left off? You and Sergeant Frank Dowell were in that foxhole when the enemy surprised you.
I come up out of that hole. Well, there was two of us, and it was pretty dark night. That Jap, he died right there. It laid him off the side of the hole. And we spent the rest of the night. The next morning, real early, we was going to move out. And I seen that that Jap soldier had a pistol. So I wanted, it was always for souvenirs. So I wanted to get that pistol. While I was taking that pistol off of him, he had a wallet up here on his jacket or whatever they call them, in a pocket. And that wallet was really protected. It had heavy cloth and cut fancy. That wallet surprised me, and so I was getting a pistol. I just put that wallet in my pocket, and we was moving out, and I never thought any more about it.
And we're going to come back to the story of the wallet and what a story that is. But I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. So you're in a foxhole, and all of a sudden, there's an enemy soldier in there. What prepares you for a moment like that? How do you respond? How do you know what to do?
You don't know. You just respond. There's where the training comes in. You can't plan anything. You just react. There's nothing planned. I don't know how else to put it. Well, I'm sure that training has, you know, and part of that training, they'd have you dig a hole, and then we'd dig another hole and fill the first hole. And what does that do? That prepares you, no matter what the orders is, no matter what you're asked to do, you do them.
And that wasn't the only close call you had over there. I think I read in the great book that your son Wes has put together about a couple others, and there was even a phrase divine intervention thrown along there. What are some of those close calls you remember?
The closest call was probably what resulted in an accident about the grenade. We were dug in for the night. The terrain, there was this, I call it a ravine, a coulee up here in Montana. We call them coulees, that led up into where we was dug in, and the Japanese soldiers was trying to crawl up and get in so that at daylight they could have these banzai attacks. And we dug a hole kind of out in front that overlooked that ravine. And at night, the only thing you can do is we stacked up several cases of grenades. Me and another fellow was in that foxhole that night, and we would toss a grenade. We give them enough time if we thought that they'd be crawling up there. We'd throw a grenade out down there, and maybe we'd throw one and wait a minute and then throw another different time so that there was no set pattern. We'd take turns. We were standing right shoulder to shoulder. It was Charlie's turn to throw a grenade, and we just opened a new box of grenades in order. It seemed, I could be a little off here, but the grenades we were used to had like a 6 or an 8 minute fuse, 8 seconds fuse. And so that was close quarters. Ordinarily, when you throw a grenade, the way it's, you got a long handle there, you grip the grenade, you pull the pin, and you throw it. And when you throw it, that handle flies off, and that starts the fuser burning. Well, if it's a 6 or an 8, whatever, there's just a little trail of sparks you can see, like at night, if you throw that grenade, you can see that grenade going through the air with those little sparks. Well, in order, a lot of times, if they're real close, hell, they could grab that grenade and throw it back, you know. So we, under those kind of conditions, we would pull the pin, let that handle fly off, and then the fuse was burning. Then we'd bring it up here and throw it. And by the time it got out there, it would explode that. We cut the time bound in half.
So they wouldn't have time to pick it up before it exploded and throw it back on you.
Yeah. So we just opened a new box of grenades. It just happened to be Charlie's turn to throw the grenade. And he pulled the pin, let the handle fly off, and brought it up here to throw it. And he hesitated just a minute because there was no sparks coming. And he hesitated just a minute. I just opened my mouth to say, "You better get rid of that, Charlie." But at the time I opened my mouth, that grenade went off right here. And I was right there.
So it went off right outside his right ear, and you're sitting shoulder to shoulder to him on the other side of him.
Yeah, standing shoulder to shoulder. And now if it had been out here, it had got us both. But it was right there, and it didn't kill him. It didn't, probably blew, it had to blow his arm off. And the concussion of it and everything, it just kind of stunned me for a minute to have that grenade go off within 2 feet of me. But he was right here next to his head, so he was shielding me. I don't know how come they heard behind us something. I don't know how come, but right out of the clear, right out of the night, it was in the night, here come 3 guys to see what happened right soon. Charlie, I was hanging on to him, and he was still on his feet, but I was trying to keep him on his feet, and it was just probably just a few seconds, but, you know, time, how do you know under conditions like that? But here they come, 3 guys, and they got him out. I was trying to keep him up so we could get out of the hole. It was dark. I couldn't see anything about him. I can't understand why he just didn't die, just be dead right there, because that grenade went off right next to his head. The 3 of them was able to keep him to his feet and got him back, and I had to stay there in that damn hole. And the next morning, his helmet was laying right over there, and I picked up his helmet, and here's a grenade breaks up in little square pieces, the way it's ground, and they're sharp. And I picked up his helmet, and here's, that steel is heavy, a good heavy steel. Here's 4 square holes in his helmet. And I pulled the liner out, the helmet liner, and here's 2 holes. And here's 2 square fragments embedded in that helmet liner, but 2 went clear through and onto his head. And I to this day, I don't know how he stayed on his feet. Well, I kept him. How was I able to even keep him on his feet? Well, that was just, and that was pretty close. What if I'd have been throwing the grenade? I'd have done like he did, but I wouldn't have hesitated. But then the grenade would have went off out there and got us both. If it had been out far enough away from him so that I got the fragments too, I'd have got it too. But
so it's a matter of time and it's a matter of distance. And I think there was another story where you got up at just the right time, so a sniper bullet that landed in the hole you just left didn't get you?
Well, I didn't see that, but a fellow that was on my right flank, he said, "Durrell, I was crouched down in an old shell hole. I wasn't behind any timber or any growth or anything. I didn't feel, I knew I didn't have the right cover. And so just like in my brain says, I got to get out of, I got to get better cover." And snipers, every few minutes there'd be the sniper fire. And I jumped up and made a dash for some brush where I'd have better cover. And afterward, that kid that was on my right, he said, "Durrell," he said, "it's a good thing you jumped when you did," because he said, "just as you jumped," he said, "a bullet kicked up, sniper bullet kicked up dirt right where you'd been." And he said, "you just got up, bang that." I heard the shots, but I didn't know where they was coming from or anything. And it was those kind of things happened several times that just made me sure that the Lord had something more that I was supposed to do. Happenstance, handle, you know, you can lay it to happenstance. It's just the way the luck was. But eventually, when it just keeps on, eventually you got to think there's more to it than just that. One other time during the monsoon rains, it just pours down day and night. If we're out on the line and in a hole, we spend our time in that hole. We was in there 3 days and nothing ever moved. It was in the mud and the water. And we had grenade boxes and two men to the hole, and we'd take turns of sitting on that grenade box. Night and day, we would take turns of sitting on that grenade box. And when the water in the hole got up, we had the combat boots, and you know, when it got up so it was over the top of the combat boots, about halfway to your knee, we'd take our steel, pull the helmet liner out of the steel helmet, and we'd bail that water out of the hole until it got down to where ankle deep. About every half hour, I'd sit on the box for a half hour, and then he'd sit on the box, and we took turns day and night. After we'd been in there for a couple of days, one time he said, "Oh, Durrell," he said, "my foot just feels like it's on fire." He was sitting on the box, and he raised his foot up like that, brought his foot up out of the water, pulled it up out of the mud and water, and it only took a minute, and steam was just coming out of that boot. Just steam, like he was holding it over a fire. I seen what he said, and what he had was a trench foot on that, and I never seen him again, but I'm sure they probably had to amputate, you know. Why was there and witnessed all that? Why didn't it happen to me? Mm-hmm. And there's all these incidents that happened through the thing, happened to somebody else, but I was there to see it. Mm-hmm. Why?
And maybe the answer to that question of why will come into clearer focus next time on Hometown Heroes. If Durrell Gibbs hadn't survived all those close calls on Okinawa, his three children would have never been born, not to mention the grandkids and great-grandkids. There are quite a few belt buckles that would have gone to other cowboys in competition over the years because he wouldn't have been there to win them. And the biggest reason you need to catch the rest of his story next time, there is a family in Japan who would not have been reunited with that fallen soldier's wallet full of photographs. How that all came about is a saga we're going to need a whole nother episode to capture, so don't miss next time. And remember, you can find photos and video with Mr. Gibbs online right now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you can join us again next time when we'll be reminded again, like we were today, that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.